Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 14th of April. I have been immersed in April 14th, 1865 for the past few days, but more on that during the second hour of our program today. The first hour of the show, our guest writes that for years, Wall Street and other big corporations have engaged in a systematic effort to suppress taxes, making it difficult for cities and states to advance progressive revenue solutions to properly fund public services, services like banks. Predatory bank deals have cost Wisconsin and Milwaukee public schools hundreds of millions of dollars, and banks continue to siphon tens of millions more each year. The state and our schools have numerous options available to get out of or renegotiate these toxic deals and to recoup losses. So it's a story that's probably been underreported, but we'll hear all about it this hour of the program. Carrie Sloan is with us, senior research analyst at the Refund America Project of the Roosevelt Institute. She works with unions and community organizations on campaigns to restore the balance of economic power from Wall Street to Main Street. She worked for over 10 years in the labor movement as a strategic researcher for the Service Employees International Union and a rank-and-file member of the United Auto Workers. We've had a number of comments on our Facebook page, so we'll be getting a lot of phone calls, I would imagine, during the course of the hour. You can call us on this issue at 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, and our Facebook page, feel free to leave comments there, always is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Carrie, thank you so much for being with us. Good afternoon.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you for being with us. I think this is a rather underreported story, so let's start here at the beginning, which I would imagine is somewhat tied to what happened to the country in 2008. Your material says that for years, Wall Street and other big corporations have engaged in a systematic effort to suppress taxes, making it difficult for cities and states to advance progressive revenue solutions to properly fund public services. What have banks done?
Yeah, this is a really important part of the story. Wall Street is very wealthy and very politically powerful, and they spend a lot of their money lobbying. And so they are opposed to having to pay taxes. And shareholders, of course, put pressure on companies to avoid paying taxes, to lobby for lower taxes, to take advantage of tax loopholes, to offshore profits. I think most people are probably familiar with a lot of the ways that corporations avoid taxes. Wall Street also, another piece of this, is that shareholders really want wages to be low. They want profits to be high. And so we can say that Wall Street is exerting downward pressure on wages, which, since people pay taxes on their wages, that's also another way that we're losing revenue from our public budgets. So when you combine all of these things, the tax avoidance and wage suppression, you end up having much less revenue coming into the system. And you mentioned 2008, the crisis in 2008. Obviously, when the economy crashed, that created a huge revenue crisis. And most communities have not recovered from that at this point. Wall Street's doing fine. They've recovered from that. But our focus is on how we can help ordinary people living in communities have better lives and have the resources that they need, and so that cities and schools and states have the revenues that they need to pay for services that we all need, such as education and your fire department and your roads.
Now, you see that the banks have been targeting state and local governments with predatory municipal finance deals. What does that mean?
Yeah, so I think it's helpful to understand a couple of things about how banks work now. There's been this strategic shift in banking profit models over time, and it used to be that banks made their money on interest income. You know, they gave out loans, and they made money on the interest on those loans. And that has shifted over time to the point to where we are now, which is that banks make most of their money on fees. And at some of the largest banks, these fees can make up to 70% of their earnings. And these are fees that I think most of us are familiar with. You know, you have transaction fees on your banking account. You get a fee for writing a check. If you don't have enough money, you get an overdraft fee. There are all these fees on credit cards, and these fees just sort of stack up and stack up. And you would think that banks would be most attracted to affluent customers. What they actually want is people who are kind of living on the edge, like people who are most likely to have an overdraft fee. People who are living paycheck to paycheck often end up needing to go into a little bit of debt in order to make ends meet. And so the more vulnerable you are, the closer you are to that edge, the more attractive you are as a target for this fee model. And this is where the predatory nature comes in. So predatory banking preys on the weaknesses of customers and borrowers. And the banks take advantage of your vulnerability by steering you into these more complex products with hidden risks. You may not understand the products. And, you know, people know about auto title loans, which you're running low on cash, get an auto title loan, and you could end up getting trapped in a debt cycle where you're working harder and harder to pay off just the interest on this loan, the high interest rate. Maybe you lose your car. You know, again, the mortgage meltdown is an example of predatory finance because, you know, what we saw in 2008 is the system fell apart after years and years of banks selling these high-priced subprime loans. You have a system where the person who's actually originating the loan or the bank who's originating the loan isn't going to keep the loan on their books. Instead, they package them together and sell them as securities. And so they don't have a stake in whether or not the borrower is going to be able to pay it back. Mm-hmm. So they had an incentive to sell tons of loans. And then you had homeowners getting mortgages with huge balloon payments down the road that they couldn't pay for. So that is the same thing that we see happening at the municipal finance level. And as revenues shrink, you have cities and states and school districts who are becoming more and more desperate for money. And when you have a school district or a city or state that's cash-strapped, then you have banks who come along and say, I see that you need money. We've got these complicated products that we can sell you. Don't worry about it. It's a way for you to get cheaper cash. And then you see that these cities and states and school districts end up in these deals that are really bad for them, and they end up hemorrhaging money on some of these deals. And, you know, a big problem is that the banks, even though they are legally required to make sure that the borrower or the person or the entity getting into the deal understands the risks and understands the deal, we see that that is not what happens.
So you're saying that in Wisconsin, municipalities, and you also highlight Milwaukee Public Schools, that these kinds of deals have cost hundreds of millions of dollars?
Yes. So these deals exist all over the country. Mm-hmm. They're everywhere. In Wisconsin, we specifically looked at the state level and at Milwaukee Public Schools. You know, we did this report after we saw this budget proposal that is an austerity budget and has huge cuts to education,
yes,
for all your listeners are aware. And so we were interested in looking to see what kinds of deals the state and the school might have. And so this is not comprehensive. I want to say that there are probably many other deals that we haven't found yet. But we did find a handful of these deals at the state level and Milwaukee Public School District levels. And the deals that we looked at specifically were Milwaukee Public Schools has something called a capital appreciation bond. And the state also had something called auction rate securities, which is a type of variable rate bond that became a disaster for many bond issuers and also investors in 2008. A lot of people lost a lot of money on those. And then there's a derivative product called an interest rate swap, which is basically sort of a hedge on a bet. Pretty complicated, but they're pitched by banks as a way to issue a variable rate bond at a lower rate than they would be able to issue a fixed rate bond for. And that's a gamble because it's a variable rate bond. You never know what's going to happen with interest rates. And the interest rate swap was sold by the banks as a hedge, sort of side bet on that gamble a way of protecting them from fluctuations in interest rates, but that's not how it worked out. And so the figures that we have in our report are basically what these deals cost the school district and the state that they shouldn't have had to pay for. So this is just money that's gone from mm-hmm. the school district and the state.
Well, didn't people in MPS and people in municipalities in the state realize that these were really bad deals and that something ought to be done about this? It's amazing to me we're not hearing very much about this.
Yeah, I agree with you that it's a really underreported story. I think part of the reason it's underreported is that this stuff can be difficult to understand.
Mm-hmm.
And so it sometimes is a difficult story to tell. But I think there are many things happening here. I think that, you know, at a certain point it did become clear in the case of interest rate swaps that these were really bad deals. You know, obviously anyone looking at their own books is going to see what's happening with the money. But, you know, in the case of interest rate swaps, they're designed to trap you in them. So the contracts are written with something called a termination fee. And these are designed by the banks to make sure that if at some point it becomes clear to, let's say, the school district, that the school district that this deal is costing the school district a lot of money and that they would be better off without this interest rate swap, they would have to pay a very large termination fee to get out of it.
I see. Like how large?
It depends. So what's kind of interesting about this is that the termination fee is based on something called the fair value, and the fair value is going to be different depending on, you know, basically the interest rates at any given moment. And so the costlier the deal is for you, the more you're going to have to pay to get out of it is basically how it works, because this is the fair value is basically the bank's projected future profits on the deal. And so the more you are losing on the deal, the costlier it is to get out.
Mm-hmm.
So in the case of the swaps that the schools and the state of Wisconsin are in, the termination fees, as of when I did this analysis a couple of months ago, were close to $200 million.
Wow, a lot of money. And do we need to precede this discussion with a discussion of what happened with what people are paying for taxes in the state of Wisconsin? You talk about Wisconsin facing a revenue crisis, which would thus put schools and municipalities in this situation where they have to get money somehow. You talk about irresponsible tax cuts producing this huge budget deficit. So if there had not been this budget deficit, we wouldn't be facing these problems now?
Yeah, I mean, there are two different issues. There's definitely the tax cut issue, which is coming from, there's a particular agenda, I think everyone's aware, in this country, the austerity agenda that's about cutting taxes, especially cutting taxes on the rich and in corporations, and then cutting services and doing things like slashing pensions. So there's that piece of it that's actually an agenda, and, you know, once you've done that, once you've cut taxes and you have a revenue crisis, then that becomes an excuse to cut the services and to sort of eliminate the social safety net and all the things that we see playing out in places where this is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the other side, though, you have these deals. I mean, like I said, the more there's a revenue shortage, the more vulnerable our public entities are to getting involved in these deals. But, like, whether or not the taxes had been cut a couple of years ago, these deals would still be there siphoning money out of the budget. So there's two different sort of levels of the problem.
You suggest for ways to do something about this that Wisconsin and MPS should do everything in their power to renegotiate or to exit these bad deals without paying termination penalties. To conduct is recommendation number one, a thorough independent investigation and issue subpoenas if necessary. The legislature and MPS should conduct a thorough oversight investigation of the bond deals that involved either swaps or auction rate securities. Has anybody suggested that we do that? Is that process in motion, do you know, in Wisconsin?
I don't know if anyone who has the power to make this happen is moving on this yet, but this is definitely something that we want to see happening, not just in Wisconsin, but nationally. But our goal is to have a national movement that, you know, holds Wall Street accountable for these deals. And like I said, these deals are all over the country at all levels of government, and so you're talking, you know, billions of dollars.
Right.
And so we want to encourage, basically, you know, school districts, states, cities to do everything they can to get the money back. And so that's, you know, part of what we hope to set in motion by issuing a report like this.
Big investment banks, Wall Street, certainly heavy donors, and we're in a presidential season already, from money going to both Republicans and Democrats. Does that put this process somewhat in jeopardy, that if you're getting money from these very people who have created the problem, you're not likely to investigate them?
Yeah, I mean, you're sort of addressing the kind of root of the whole mess that we're in, I think, in terms of our political system, the influence that Wall Street has on the political system and how they're able to use their money and their power to avoid being held accountable, which is why we work with unions and community organizations, because we need to create demand from our communities. You know, you are taking this money away from us. We want it back. It has to stop. And so that's what I think we need to do, is to make sure that we are holding politicians, elected officials, accountable for what is happening in our communities and the role that Wall Street is playing in us not having enough money for basic things like our K-12, affordable higher ed, all of the things that kind of make us great, really, as a country that we used to be able to afford. And so, yeah, that's what I would say, is that if we see that happening, if we see that there's an elected official who's just kowtowing to Wall Street, we need to be demanding that change.
We're talking this hour about the Refund America Project, and our guest is senior research analyst at the Refund America Project of the Roosevelt Institute, Carrie Sloan. Carrie works with unions, community organizations on campaigns to restore the balance of economic power from Wall Street to Main Street. This particular report, it's happening all over the country, but we're talking about Wisconsin because we live here. She says that predatory bank deals have cost Wisconsin and Milwaukee Public Schools hundreds of millions of dollars, and banks are continuing to siphon tens of millions more each year. They are calling for steps that can be taken to change this. We talked about one of their recommendations, and we'll talk about others, including petitioning the Securities and Exchange Commission for disgorgement. We'll find out what that means. We welcome your phone calls as well. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. From the general outlines of what we've been talking about, do you think that we should be renegotiating the deals here? Do you think that this will go anywhere with the current political climate that we live in this state and in other states in the country, and with the amount of money that's going from Wall Street into these kinds of loans? And why this isn't a much greater reported story than it is. We welcome your calls on this, and we will start taking them momentarily. Lines are open. 800-486-8655 is the number. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Okay, let's go to phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. We had a caller who couldn't stay on the line, but it may be important for us to say this before we get rolling, Carrie, is that we're not talking about all banks when we discuss this. Small community banks and credit unions, this person says, are certainly not to blame.
Right, that's a good point. We're focusing on the big banks that tend to be the ones that are doing business with, you know, the entities that we're talking about, the state, the school district, and the city. Those are usually the banks that you've heard of, the major banks that also, you know, played a role in the financial crash in 2008.
The banks we bailed out.
Exactly.
Yeah. Pam in Madison, our first caller. Hi, Pam.
Hi. This is all pretty mind-boggling, and I'm wondering if there's an example of a state that is fighting back, and is there an infrastructure for fighting back? Whose job is it to fight this fight?
Yeah, okay, that's a great question. I think it's I have a couple of answers there. One, in terms of whose job it is to fight back, I should say that, you know, when we're talking about legal remedies, the reason that we're talking about that is that we have really good reason to believe that there were federal rules that were broken by the banks in pitching these deals. And so there's the Municipal Securities Rulemaking Board, MSRB, has a rule called the G17, and that requires the banks to deal fairly with their clients, their customers, like bond issuers. And so they're not allowed to omit facts or downplay risks, which we have seen banks doing. And so because of that federal rule, there are these legal options to pursue, including, as Kathleen mentioned, asking the SEC to do an investigation and get that some of that money back from the banks. And so we can be asking the SEC to enforce the law by doing that. There also may be state-level legal options, and, you know, on those options, you can have the Attorney General taking action. You can also have, the state legislature can look into it and do an investigation. There are various levels where you could try to go after these deals and get the money back.
Would it be, would it make sense and be more powerful if you had the attorneys general of several states who have been affected by this to gather together and seek relief?
Yes. You know, one of the things that we are really encouraging is, collective action. So it's more powerful when you have more people taking action. The more states, the more state attorney generals, the more even school boards, who are actively calling for accountability from Wall Street on these deals, the better. So I could see something like that, a group of AGs doing this together. And then...
Yes, go ahead.
I was going to say, to the second part of Pam's question, there are a number of entities who have taken action to get relief from these deals, to get money back, and to get out of the deals without paying termination fees. So just a couple of examples. The city of Modesto, California, used an arbitration process, and they recovered a couple million dollars for auction rate securities. And there's also the Baldwin County Sewer Service, a utility in Alabama, got back all of its past payments on swaps, and they got out of the termination fees. And there are a handful of other examples like that.
And what about congressional action? Would it make sense for somebody to champion this in Congress?
I'm not sure what that would look like, since what we're talking about is that the banks violated these particular rules. There are these legal options that we have to take advantage of. At the congressional level, I mean, what we've seen happening is that, you know, as we've had attempts to regulate banks and make predatory behavior less easy for them, we've seen them fighting back. So it would definitely be good if we had more involvement from lawmakers at the federal level who are pushing back on Wall Street and not letting them get away with this. So I would encourage that.
Mm. Well, maybe MPS needs to ask the federal government to bail it out. Well, no, seriously, maybe it would take something like that.
Right. I mean, that's the sort of fundamental underlying unfairness is that our tax money was used to bail out these financial institutions after their irresponsible behavior crashed the economy. And then they've turned around and taken advantage of the crisis with these predatory deals. And then we have, you know, school districts that are suffering deeply, laying off teachers and closing libraries and all of that. And so, yeah, like we could ask for a bailout of our municipalities.
Our number is 800-486-8655. Thanks, Pam, for your call. Ruth in Eau Claire, hi. Ruth, are you there? Ruth is gone. Sally in Middleton, hi.
Hi. I just want to give my testimony to be very, very careful. I had had an inheritance about 45 years ago, so I'm a little hazy, but it was so painful. I lost a bunch. Well, I lost just about everything. And two, I knew enough to spread my investments around. I had this money, and some of I kept in a bank, and then the other I was told to invest. And the best investment was Vanguard Group, or whatever you call it. But the other firms, these were firms. These were just, wasn't a guy in a house someplace. These were firms. Every one of them lost my money. Went right down the tube. Two times I was called by other people who were suffering, and we had meetings at banks. I forget just exactly where, but these were public places. And everybody was mad, and yet there was absolutely nothing we could do about it. There was no place we could call. I mean, we did it. I did it.
And, Sally, was this in 2008?
2008, did you say?
What year? What 40, year?
45 years ago.
Oh, 45 years ago.
Yeah.
Oh.
Maybe a little more, but it's slightly more 45 years ago. But, I mean, there was no recourse. There was just nothing. I had done it. I had said, okay, mm-hmm. they sounded good. I knew, in two cases, I knew the people
mm-hmm.
who and they were local, and they apologized to me. Because I happened to bump into them, you know. I mean, they were here. I was just, boy, it was a bad.
It was really bad. I understand. It was bad. Carrie.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I mean, I think, I'm not sure exactly what happened here, but I think that, you know, many, many people have been taken advantage of by some of these big banks and predatory practices. Obviously, predatory practices have been around, you know, a lot longer than since 2008. And I think that this is just another example of the way that we need to fight back and restore the balance of power to our communities away from Wall Street. Wall Street just has too much power to get away with things like this, because even when there are regulations in place, often banks will pay a fine, and that's sort of a cost of doing business when they get caught doing bad things. And so we need to be taking action that's really turning things around so that Wall Street is not able to get away with this, so that we get money back and we, you know, take some of their power away so they aren't able to make sure that the laws just work in their favor.
When you talk about seeking relief under state law, let's talk about this a little more. The state may also be able to pursue similar remedies under Wisconsin law in court. The disclosures, I'm not sure what this means, required by MSRB Rule G17 were also required by the contracts between the state of Wisconsin and the banks. What does that mean?
Right. So this is, again, there's this federal rule, the Fair Dealing Rule, which is that MSRB Rule G17 that requires that banks disclose risks. And as I've mentioned, and we've seen a lot of examples of the way that banks, when they're selling these deals, have downplayed risks, have failed to disclose realistic worst-case scenarios. In some cases with the auction rate securities in particular, we've seen banks' internal documents where people are inside the bank are talking to each other and saying things like, this market for these products is in trouble. I think it's going to melt down. And then 3 weeks later, turning around and convincing a school district to get involved in, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars of these deals. So there's tons of evidence like that. Those things are violations of this federal rule. And that federal rule also applies to state law. So if seeking relief under state law as an alternative, let's say, to the SEC investigation, you can take advantage of the fact that there's this federal rule that applies to the contracts that the bank signs with the school district or whatever it is, and make your legal case there.
Thank you very much for your call, Sally, and I'm sorry for your situation. Pam on Facebook says, or asks actually, is there a single cumulative number? For example, the state of Wisconsin and or MPS could recoup XMM if they fill in the blank. After reading this report, right now that if is pretty unfathomable, but having a simple dollar amount could make it more graspable.
Yes, I can give you a dollar amount.
Okay.
So the dollar amount that we have based on the deals that we found here, which I want to say again is not, you know, it's not comprehensive for the state of Wisconsin, is $455 million that we could pursue. $255 million of that is costs already incurred, and another $200 million of that is future costs, which is what's represented by the termination fee.
Wow, this is a lot of money, isn't it?
It's a lot of money. It's a lot of money, especially when you look at, for example, the proposed cuts to the University of Wisconsin and the K-12 public education. The proposed cuts are huge and, you know, hugely destructive, but they're less than that amount. They're less than $455.
Mm. Let's go next to Charlie in Madison. Hi, Charlie.
Good afternoon. I'd like to talk about small amounts and little banks. And before someone mentioned that a Facebook comment was let the small ones off the hooks, or the hook rather, I had an instance many years ago when I was one of those people skating near the furry edge where I would every month get a bank fee, a bank fee, a bank fee for checking account. One month, the final straw was my check didn't make it there on the date it was supposed to be electronically deposited. They took out my bank fee, overdrafted me, and then charged me overdraft fee. Mm. So, you know, people are getting that kind of treatment. And this was a small hometown local bank. So, you know, I feel sorry for people that are in that position and have to be stuck with banks that are just plain taking advantage of people who have no other option than to be taken advantage of by the bank.
Mm-hmm. But we did establish there's a difference between everybody's trying to get a dollar, right? The kind of banks that, unfortunate as it was for Charlie, between small banks and these huge, huge, you know, too big to fail banks that we had to bail out that are doing all these kinds of deals. The small banks aren't doing these kinds of predatory loans, or are they? Any of them? Carrie?
Well, there's definitely an issue of scale here.
Right.
So the banks that are getting, you know, the trillions of dollars in public money that's available for banks nationally tend to be these, like we discussed before, you know, your Bank of America, your J.P. Morgan Chase, Goldman Sachs, the frequent bond underwriter. It's usually those players. There are also often some smaller local financial firms, but they don't tend to be the consumer banking.
Right. Thank you, Charlie, for the call. So let's talk about this in terms of interest. Is this right? There's a 600% interest that MPS is paying on these? 600%?
Yeah, let me explain what that is. So that's on something called a capital appreciation bond. And a capital appreciation bond is a bond that's issued school districts. Not just school districts, but school districts are, a lot of school districts are involved in these capital appreciation bonds. So basically what happens is it's similar to a home mortgage that has a big balloon payment somewhere down the road. There's usually a long period where the school district or whoever issued the bond isn't paying any principal payments and isn't paying any interest payments, but interest is compounding. And so by the time there's a payment to be made on this loan, it's a very big payment. It's a balloon payment. And, and actually, this is the Attorney General of California called these the payday loans of municipal finance. They're, you know, they because of the compounding interest, you have a situation where by the end of it, after the 37-year term, the school district has paid 600% interest.
Wow.
And that's not even the worst of it. These deals are all over the place. And, what you typically have with like a 30-year bond is your interest by the end of it is about the same as what your original principal was. There's sort of a one-to-one relationship there. And here you have, 13, you have final payment amounts that are 13 times the original issue amount. And, the reason why school districts and other issuers get involved in these is because they don't have money for things. Especially we saw a lot of these, right after the financial crash when school districts, let's say, they were going to build a new school, and there was a promise to the people in the community that they were finally going to get that new high school. And then there's a huge drop in revenue after the financial crash. And then the banks come along and they say, hey, I see you really need money for a new school, but you don't think you're going to have money to make interest payments or principal payments for a long time. I've got this thing called a capital appreciation bond. By the time you start paying it off 20 years from now, everything will be different. So, fine right here. And, one of the key features of this, of course, is that the people who actually approve the deal are usually long gone by the time the payments come due.
Right.
Because these terms are so long.
Right. So it was a matter of people acting in good faith. It was the only deal they could get to get the new high school or to get needed improvements on a school?
Yeah. I mean, I think that, just looking at the context that these decisions are made in, when you have an environment that is so, anti-tax or anti-progressive revenue solutions, and you've had this kind of drumbeat for years about how we're spending too much.
Right.
And then you have, tax avoidance, and you have the tax cuts for the wealthy, and you have all of these things that are contributing to a situation where you don't have the revenue that you need, and you also don't have an environment where you can ask for, where you feel like you can ask for new revenue. And so that's when a product like this becomes very attractive, because you can deliver on your promises, or you can pay for things that the school district needs. I used the new high school example, but there might be really necessary capital improvements. You might have buildings that are falling apart. So there are things that you need, and you have no way to pay for them. And so this, again, is an example of like Wall Street being very successful at creating the revenue crisis in the first place, and contributing to this political environment where there's a lack of political will for progressive revenue solutions, and then coming in with this quote-unquote solution that's actually going to make the problem worse in the long run.
We're going to welcome more phone calls. Our guest this hour is Carrie Sloan. She is Senior Research Analyst at the Refund America Project of the Roosevelt Institute. And we are talking about, their... I don't think too many people know about this, Wisconsin's dirty deals, they call them, Wall Street draining taxpayer money out of public budgets, and what we can do about it. They have recommendations for Wisconsin and Milwaukee Public Schools to do everything in their power to renegotiate or exit bad deals without paying termination penalties, and also to recoup some of their losses. And these deals, you've heard her outline them, they're incredible. You're paying an incredible amount of money for a 30-year loan, and school districts in some cases, not just in Wisconsin, but in various parts of the country, were forced to do this because our guest says taxes, the rate that we're paying those who are wealthy are not paying what they probably should be paying to keep schools and municipalities doing very well. And so you don't have as much money, the state doesn't, in the school districts to keep the schools open or to keep them running the way they should be. So these banks come in with predatory loans, and it's a very large problem. And they are urging Renew America Project for states, for school districts to conduct thorough independent investigations, issue subpoenas if necessary. They say Wisconsin's legislature and MPS should conduct an oversight investigation of the bond deals that involved either swaps or auction rate securities. 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org, our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go back to more phone calls for Carrie Sloan, Senior Research Analyst at the Refund American Project of the Roosevelt Institute. Kenneth in Janesville, hi.
Hello. There have been school boards and city councils and county supervisors that have been elected. What have these bodies been saying about what the situation is?
Well, I think, it depends on, the particular school board. There are school board members that I've spoken to who are very interested in getting the SEC to investigate the deals that, they saw go down while they were sitting on school boards, because they said that they didn't understand, that the school board did not understand the various deals that they got involved in, that the risks were not disclosed. And so the more people like that that are, able and willing to come forward and, make these kind of demands, request that the SEC investigate, request that the state look into it, the better. I think that this is something that we're trying to publicize, the fact that there are options, because I think that until recently, I think that most people didn't realize that they could actually take action on some of these deals, because there's this sort of misunderstanding that if you sign a contract, then you're stuck with a deal. And, what we've been saying is when the banks broke the rules, when they got you to sign for these deals, that made that contract irrelevant, basically. Not irrelevant, but it means that the contract isn't valid because they violated it, and you can get out of it.
Do you think... I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I'm wondering if you think there's widespread understanding among the people who made those deals that now that they were bad deals. Or is it so complicated and couched in, legalese, that a lot of people don't even realize they were bad deals, which is hard to believe, but...
Yeah, I think that, I think that when, basically back in late 2008, as part of the Fed sort of stepping in to bail out the crashing financial system, interest rates were lowered drastically, and they've stayed very low since then. When that happened, it started to become very clear that a lot of the swap deals in particular were very bad. The auction rate securities market also failed earlier in 2008, and that's when the losses started showing up for people and when they became aware that they had gotten into, these bad deals. And I think that the missing piece here then is what to do about it. In the case of auction rate securities, you have the SEC, who doesn't tend to think of municipal issuers as the victims of fraud. And so they have gone after banks for auction rate securities fraud, and they've recouped money for investors, but they haven't done that yet for municipal issuers. And so that's something that we would like to see. So I think that, I think that it's with a lot of these deals, it's pretty clear that they were bad because they've become big losers. But the next step is taking action to right the wrongs. The other side of this, though, is that Wall Street is constantly coming up with new products. So while most school districts and states aren't going to get suckered into the types of deals that we're talking about today from here on out, there's always going to be something else. And there's another level of fees and extraction that we haven't been talking about yet, even just for, services that Wall Street provides to cities, bond underwriting, banking service. We've looked into these fees that they charge and have found that they tend to be excessive and arbitrary. And so, you know, another point that we want to make to public officials is you have leverage. You control, you know, trillions of dollars nationally. The state legislature in Wisconsin, the Milwaukee Public Schools, all these various levels of government, there's a lot of money that banks want to be, they want a piece of it. And you can use that as leverage to get better deals from the banks.
Let's go to more phone calls. We're running short on time. Thank you, Kenneth, for your call. Kurt, Chippewa Falls. Hi.
Yeah, thank you. Knowing that the whole financial industry can drag out legislation and adjudication and all that, they can drag it out forever, and they're still in control. What's the possibility of naming and shaming the actual people by name, the individuals, starting at the top and working down as far as necessary, the people who call the shots and the sort of thing, at their country clubs, their churches, their synagogues, wherever they gather, shame them until they decide to cooperate?
Carrie.
Yeah, I think that's another thing that is an option for people who I assume that you're talking about the bankers who
right.
suckered us all into these deals. That's definitely something. There's a movement right now targeting hedge fund managers, and that's something that we don't have time to get into now, but that's another place where there's some, you know, predatory behavior going on, and there's a group that's showing up at places where these hedge fund managers are and doing exactly what
oh, really?
The caller is talking about, publicly sort of shaming them and as a step in a process of holding them accountable for what they're doing.
Hmm. Time for one more phone call. The report, by the way, is on our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, so you can get more information about solutions, which our guest recommends. And John in Milwaukee is our next caller. Hi, John.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
I wonder if the guest has heard about the Tax Wall Street Party. Webster Tarpley founded that. It's very small right now. But he proposes, I think it's 0.5% of a tax on every the millions of transactions that are done every day on Wall Street to pay for the gangster financial manipulation.
Carrie, about 30 seconds.
I think things like that are a great idea. Financial transaction taxes, things like that, are a good potential source of revenue and the, you know, righting the wrongs, restoring some of those balance of power.
Carrie, thank you so much for this. I don't think too many people know about it, and we really appreciate your report and your time today. Thanks.
Thank you so much for having me.
Carrie Sloan, Senior Research Analyst at the Refund America Project of the Roosevelt Institute. What we've been talking about is their report, Wisconsin's Dirty Deals, How Wall Street Drains Taxpayer Money Out of Public Budgets and What We Can Do About It. The report, again, is on our Facebook page. If you'd like to read more about what we've been talking about, that's The Kathleen Dunn Show. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing this hour, and thanks to KP as well for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. We have news coming up from National Public Radio, and we'll return and talk about the days before, just before the day of, and the days and months after the assassination of President Abraham Lincoln 150 years ago.